When? Tomorrow?
Morning.
All right. Should we cancel for tomorrow and pick it up on Thursday? What do you say?
We don't cancel on the day. Even if you learn something else.
Yeah. Okay. All right.
What about the next day? It's in bed tomorrow.
No. Chas v'shalom. Again, you know, amech kulam tzaddikim here. You're all great saints that you came in to learn on in this vacation period. It means kol yom sichasi. Okay. So what we're looking here is on nun beis amud beis, and I would like to start with the two dots just to start something fresh. You know, again, it's the. So if you count up from the bottom of the page, we'll count up 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 and a half lines, or, you know, make it 8 and a half lines, you know, where it starts with the Arba Yeladim. You have such a thing? And basically, this line of Arba Yeladim is actually a quote from the Mishnah. You know, we're in the fifth parak of Sukkah, and the Mishnah is very critical. Where is the mission exactly on what daf? It's way before, isn't it?
Nun Aleph.
On the bottom. Okay. So the subject of this mission on Nun Aleph Amud Aleph, of course, is what's called Simchat Beit Hashoeva. Correct. And there are very profound things going on over here. And one of the things that goes on here is Arba Yeladim Mipirchei Kahuna. Now let's try to. Again, I know you did this, but for me, I need a review on it. There are young boys. Again, we have to see exactly how old they were, perhaps. But they were called Pirchei Kahuna. You know, when a flower grows in its original state, it's called a perach, you know, when it first starts sprouting. So that indicates a young person in his youth. And the Mishnah reports that they would climb up ladders, ubideyem kadim, and in their hands, as they climbed up these ladders, they were holding jugs. And these jugs were made of, had a content of 30 lugim of oil. You know, that's a massive amount of oil in each jug. And therefore, Mea vi esrim lug, if you multiply 30 by 4, you get 120. So it seems like they were carrying up the ladder in order to, this was oil for what? What was this?
To light
the menorah, yeah. Correct, the menorah. And
this is the menorah, special light for some special
show. It seems to me that this is the menorah. We're gonna investigate that now.
Four people for the menorah, four people. Yeah, the menorah didn't hold that kind of amount of oil.
Okay, so
I'm just asking. I'm sorry.
No. I'm glad you're asking. I just think that the Tana here requires 120 lug, and it doesn't say explicitly that there were 30 lug in each one of these jars, but that seems to be the indication. Why did they need this massive volume of oil? That's something that hopefully we'll get to see. And then it says Shehein Matilim Lechol Seifel. The Sefel. Do you have that? In the Mishnah, I'm saying. Okay? So, back in the Mishnah, towards the bottom of page Nun Aleph Amud Aleph. Right? You just have to turn two pages back. So, what does this mean? Shehein Matilin Lechol Sefel Usefel. He says in the name of the Tiferes Yisrael, that's one of the super commentaries on the Mishnah, in one of these footnotes, he says, V'hayu chozrim umatilin shemen lisfolim b'chol eis shehitzrichu lekach. You get the impression that the original Kadim had a surplus of oil, and that oil would in turn, if need be, again, I guess if they ran out of the supply of oil, would be poured into a sefel. A sefel, I think, is a smaller container. So the larger containers are called kadim, or in singular kad, and each kad held how much? 30 lug. That's a massive amount. That's a massive amount of oil. And the sefel, although I'm not sure exactly how much of a volume it could be a receptacle for, but nevertheless it was a much smaller receptacle, and the oil from the kadim were poured into the sefel, when there was a need to do so. Okay, so let's see if in learning this Gemara, we can get a little bit more of an insight into what went on. Iboilahu. Now, for those of you who are into, you know, methodology of learning, you know, there's a book called Practical Talmudic Dictionary by my friend Rabbi Frank. He spent, I think it was 11 years researching it. It's a great work. And if I'm sure, even though I didn't check it out, if you look up Iboilahu in his dictionary, he'll probably give you examples all over shot. Maybe by chance he'll quote Sukkot Daf Beis as an example of Iboilahu. So Iboilahu means that in the yeshiva, they threw out a question, otherwise called a safek, right, a doubt. And what was their doubt? Me'avi esrim log kulhu odilma l'chol chad v'chad. Okay, this number, this volume of 120 lug, correct? And that's mentioned in the Mishnah, is it not? The Mishnah, let's go back and look at it one more time. The Mishnah mentions 120 lug. Yeah, right, that's what it says. 120 lug. So the Gemara wants to know kulhu. Kulhu, do you see the word kulhu?
Yeah.
Okay, so let's underline the word kulhu, because that's the first possibility of two possibilities.
Yeah.
Okay. Odilma, or perhaps l'chol chad v'chad, let's underline those three words, l'chol chad v'chad. So what we've done is we've isolated two phrases. The first phrase is kulhu, that represents possibility number one. And the second phrase is l'chol chad v'chad, which is possibility number two. Okay? So now we're going to try to understand what those possibilities
are. The question is on each jug. Was it 120 or each jug divided?
Let's talk first of all about the Pirkei Kuhuna. Again, how many Pirkei Kuhuna did we have?
Four.
The Mishnah says there were four. Okay? And we also have in the Mishnah that they were carrying, these four Pirkei Kuhuna were carrying 120 lug.
Yeah, right.
Well, there are two ways of learning that. One way of learning is that each one of the four Pirkei Kuhuna was individually carrying 120 lug.
Right, right.
I mean, that's a massive amount.
Yeah.
Okay? The other way of saying is not l'chol chad v'chad, that each one of them, again, literally l'chol chad v'chad mean each one of them meaning the Pirkei Kuhuna, but rather kulhu. Kulhu means the sum total of lugim, of shemen that was carried by four, was 120. And if there were four Pirkei Kuhuna carrying a sum total of volume of 120, then each one of the Pirkei Kuhuna was carrying how much? Toshma, meaning I'm going to quote to you a brisa. Toshma always introduces after an Iboilahu a brisa to answer the question, to tip the scale in one direction. And what does it say in this brisa? The brisa says, ubiadehem, and in their hands, which probably means in each one of the hands of the four, again, I don't know if it's the right hand, the left hand, or both hands, kadeh shemen shel shloshim shloshim luk. Now, it's each one had and was carrying a flask of oil that had within it 30 lug. Sheim kulam, which if we add them all together, me'avi esrim lug, they equal into 30 lug. So we said back on the Mishnah that each one of the four Pirkei Kuhuna was carrying a flask that contained 30 lug. That's only according to the final conclusion that we know. But this wasn't so simple. There was a possibility that each one was actually carrying 120 lug, which is a massive amount. Okay. Now, one thing I want to comment here, and maybe I'm off the beaten path here, but it seems to me that this is a massive amount of oil. So first question is, why do they need so much oil? And the second question that I want to ask is, how do you have the strength to carry such a massive amount? Oil is not a light matter. You know, and if you multiply it according to one, 30 lug is a massive amount, but 120 lug, I mean, that's...
Gallons, you're talking to the gallons.
Gallons of oil, my gosh. You know. I have trouble when I go here to this 24 place and, you know, carry one little flask of oil. It's already heavy for me.
So, what's 30 lug then? What are we talking about? 30?
A little more than a liter.
I know, we'd have to exactly look it up. That would again be in Frank's dictionary, but I'm sure we have it here somewhere. All right.
Wow,
it's really a lot. Tana, we learned in a Bryce. Vehem, okay, that means, and they, I guess again we're talking about these Pirchei Kahuna, that again are carrying this massive amount of oil in these various receptacles, Shloshim Lug. Meshubachim Hayu. They were excellent. I guess it means they were very strong.
Yeah.
Yoser, even more, Mibna Shal Marta Barbas Baitos, this good old Martha, I'll call her, right, who is the daughter of Baitos. Baitos was a very famous Kohen who was known to be... So one second. So Bna Shel Marta Bas Baitus. Okay. So this is the son of Marta. The son of Marta, and she in turn was the daughter of Baitus. But the son of Marta was a very famous Kohen, and one of the reasons apparently that he was famous for is because he was very, very strong. Now, in the footnote here, he says that Achas me'avodas ha'korban hi holochas ha'ivarim l'mizbech l'shem ha'k'tarasam k'mvur b'zvachon nidon kan hu b'korban ola shebo l'mizbech has kol evrei ha'korban. Okay, so after they slaughtered the animal for a sacrifice, they had to bring the parts of the limbs of the animal onto the mizbech in order that it should be burnt on the mizbech. That's called ha'k'tarah. And in the case of a korban ola, every last aver, every last limb of the animal had to be transferred over to the mizbeach. Amru al binah shel Marta bal Baitus, and they used to say, this was what they talked about, the son of Marta, Shoya Notel, he himself, without any help, would carry shtei yerechos shel shar hagadol. He would carry two thighs of this gigantic ox. Shalakuach bi elef. It was so expensive, this gigantic ox, that you paid elef zuz, 1,000 zuz. You know, that's a massive amount of money. And he would personally take these two yerechos, these two thighs, that probably weighed hundreds of pounds, and he would carry it over to the mizbeach in order to be makrif. Umahalach, and he would carry it up the kevesh, right? You know that the ramp up to the mizbeach. Akev bitzad gudol. In other words, what's it called? The thumb of the toe of the toe. I don't know. Right? Can you call that toe a thumb? Right? Would be behind the gudol. You know, it's right behind his other leg. You know, he took very small steps. As most people, if they're carrying a heavy thing, they want to run. For him, it was no sweat. He was so powerful, he could carry it even in very small steps and take his time. But for some reason, which I don't know why, we'll have to see in the next five words, the Brisa reports that the other Kohanim, who were part of the Mishmeres, they were also, you know, responsible for doing the avodah. They didn't appreciate the fact that this man, the Ben of Marta, was so powerful and he did it as a one man show. They didn't want a one man show, so therefore they objected because he was taking both yerachim, you know, both yerechot, both thighs of this massive ox together, and he was taking it all for himself. And why did they object? Mishum, because of the principle, which is based on a pasuk in Mishlei, Barov Am Hadras Melech. That's a very famous universal principle in halacha. Barov Am Hadras Melech means we want every member of the community to be there, to participate in the service of the king. And that is an extra praise, an extra glorification of the king. So when one Kohen decides that he's going to do it all on his own, then that's not right. People should share, should divvy up the avoda amongst as many Kohenim as possible. I just want to read to you a footnote that he has here on Berov HaMahadras Melech. He says that whenever there's a karbon tzibur, which means that the karbon is an obligation incumbent upon the entire community, then we want to get all the members of the community involved. Ach, however, there's such a thing called a karbon yachid, which is an individual sacrifice. And there, all you need is one kohen to do the avoda. But here we're talking about the karbon ola that was brought in the Mishkan, in the Migdash, on behalf of the entire tzibur. Once there's a mitzvah that relates to the entire tzibur, there's a collection of individuals, so we're not talking about an individual obligation, but rather a collective one, then the principle of Berov Am Hadras Melech kicks in.
Are you reading the Hebrew or English?
I'm reading the Hebrew.
Oh, okay, because you seem to be reading the writer of the English.
Yeah, I don't have... Masifta has not been translated. It would be an amazing contribution to translate Masifta, because there's so many embellishments here in the footnotes. It's really amazing.
Let me ask you for a question, Rabbi, because you did a little bit of this yesterday. This Basti, this had to have happened just before the destruction of the temple.
Because of Baitus? Right. You mean, the Baitusim were a sect, you know.
Well, no, because she's the one who ate the date, isn't it? And we've been talking about this.
Yeah, you had it here in Perek HaCholil?
We did, no.
About Baitus?
No, he looked up.
It's Gemara Gid. All the sugis of the Churban.
Yeah. Why did they bring something that happened so close? Because we know things changed from the beginning of the first temple, the second temple. This is like the end of the second temple. And they bring the story towards the end where it's like, I'm just...
It's a brilliant question. If I think of anything, I'll let you know. Okay, let's just see if we can... My Meshubach. Okay, so we quoted this brisa that describes these Pirchei Kohuna that were carrying, 30 lug of Shemen up the ladder as Meshubachim, that they were praiseworthy. And they were even more praiseworthy, if you remember the brisa, than B'na Shel Marta, correct?
Yeah.
Because it says, Mishubachim Hayu Yoser Mi B'na Shel Marta.
Yeah.
So, what's so great about them? Okay, they were powerful. I think, again, I may be misleading you. We'll see if the Gemara is going to bear me out. The Gemara is wondering, why do we praise someone because of their physical prowess? There must be more to it than that. Ilema Mishum Yukra, perhaps what it means is, Yukra means kavod, to give honor, that by carrying up these very heavy kadim, that is an expression of kavod. Maybe this kad, I'm just thinking out loud with you, has the status of what's called a klishares, because it was used in the context of the avodah and the migdash, and therefore it has a special sanctity to it. This was the fact that they chose these pirchei kahuna, who were very powerful, to carry up these kadim up the ladder, that would indicate a certain expression of kavod, of honor and dignity towards these klishares. So the Gemara is not so happy with that. The Gemara says, Hani Yakiret Fe. You know what? With all due respect to these Kadim, but the case of the Yerechos, you remember those thighs of the ox, of the Korban Olav that's brought on behalf of the entire community, the Tzibur of Klal Yisrael, those were heavier. And perhaps we should give more credit then to B'na Shel Marta. Again, the Brice assumes that who in a choice between the Pirchei Kahuna and the B'na Shel Marta, who gets a greater praise? It's the Pirchei Kahuna. But why? Again, they were carrying very heavy kadim, which each of which had 30 lug. But truth be told, that if we're dealing, right now I think the Gemara is assuming that we're dealing with physical prowess, which requires a greater physical prowess? To carry two major thighs of this gigantic ox, or to carry 30 lug of shemen? it would seem that it's heavier to carry the Yerechos. So why are they, the Pirkei Kuna, considered superior? They supersede even Bina Shel Marta. Ella says the Gemara, you know why we're praising them? Hasam, there in the case of the son of Marta, Keves Umeruba Velo Zakif. Okay, take a look in Rashi. I'm going to read to you what I have here. Hu hoya mahalich al gabi keves hamizbech she'eno omeid zakuf. It was bishipua. In other words, the ramp was on a slope, and it's easier to carry something heavy up a slope rather than something that's completely flat on the ground. Hacha, but here in the case of Pirkei Kohuna, Sulamos Uzkif Tuva. They would climb up the Sulamos, which were absolutely vertical, correct, on a 90 degree angle, with a very heavy weight or baggage in their hands. So which is harder, to climb up with something heavier up a slope, or to go absolutely straight up, vertical, even if it's a lesser burden, it weighs less, and the answer is the latter. Yeah. Now, ladder with two T's. So I find this Gemara very strange, to be honest with you. I'm not sure why we need this entire discussion here. Let me just see for a minute if any of the footnotes here on the bottom.
I was trying to do this in English, not because I know. I think it's because of the next part. The Lo HaYachatzer B'Rishalayim.
You think so?
That's what I thought. I'm not a learner.
Okay, no, it could be, you're right. I'm just wondering here about this whole discussion, which is heavier and the slope and going straight up.
Yeah, because I raised this yesterday. It just seems such a non-Jewish concept.
Right.
One's physical prowess.
Physical prowess.
Yeah, it seems just like so alien, really.
Yeah. You see the next three lines are important? Okay. The Loya Chatzer B'Yushalayim, there wasn't even a single courtyard in Jerusalem that didn't have the light, that wasn't lit up, illuminated by the Beit HaShoeva. Tana, we learned in a Braisa. Ha'or. Tana. It says, this Braisa is going to teach us something about the light that, that radiated from the Beis HaMikdash. Isha haisa boreres chitin li'or shel Beis HaShoev. The light coming out of the Beis HaMikdash at the time of the Simchas Beis HaShoev. You remember the Mishnah describes all the different avukos, the torches and so forth. That facilitated a woman, no matter where in Yerushalayim she was, even at the outer perimeter of Yerushalayim, when she sat in her courtyard, she was able, haisa boreres, She could select chitim, the kernels of wheat. Sometimes there are little pebbles inside the wheat, and you have to remove them, and you need a very very sharp light. Very intense light. We are shall base hashoev.
So I think that we're trying to show that it was four ladders high, and it was so high that it carried so much oil that it gave over. They have to show the strength of how they were able to do that.
How the light was so intense
that it was able,
right,
to do
but
that.
I'll tell you what still bothers me. With this whole discussion about whether the son of Marta was greater in his physical prowess in terms of carrying something, or was it the Pirkei Kohuna? Who?
Well, that was the whole concept of the Simchas Beis HaShoeva, right? Who were the people who were dancing? It was all the rabbis and all of the yeshivas, right?
Right.
It was showing that that they were so great in love of Torah that everything was done in great.
Right.
That's the first part of the Mishnah. If you didn't see the Simchas Beis HaShoeva, you never saw Simcha.
Right.
I know.
Let me just quote to you one thing. And again, I don't know if it's going to help us at all. Okay. So first of all, you should know that there's a discussion here based on the Yerushalmi about how many menorahs there were and how tall they were and the height of the menorah and so forth and so on, why they had to climb up the ladders. So that's one thing that we may want to look into. I'm just mentioning, you know, the outline, the footnote here. And the second thing we want to know is, why is the son of Marta carrying these Yerechos with such small steps? You know, we said it was Akev Betzad Godel. And perhaps this enhanced the mitzvah. Okay, that's another discussion. And it's interesting, this was an expression of respect. You know, the fact that they took these small steps. What was respectful about it? So he quotes a pasuk in Parshas Mishpatim, and there it says, "Ashelo segala ervasacha olav." Right. In other words, that when they, if you take these wide, you know, wide steps, right?
Yeah.
It would.
But I was thinking more of Shabbos. You know, there was a story in Shabbos where these people would take wide steps and they put chains on them, so they wouldn't. That's what I was thinking, that they.
So again, so that's, I'm just telling you, there's one approach that says that the son of Marta was praiseworthy because he took these small steps in an apparent effort to circumvent the violation of Lo Segala Vaskalov. But there's another approach, and that's of Rashi. Rashi says that by taking these small steps, he was demonstrating his power, his physical prowess, his gvura. So the question again that we have is, what? Why all this emphasis on physical strength? Okay, so that's number one. Then he has a discussion here about Barov Am Hajus Melech, and I see we're running out of time, so with this we'll end. He says that according to the Sfas Emes, the Keves was Karev Betisha Upar Bi Esrim Vi Arba Mishum Kovdo Himay Yochol Litlo Levado Madulo Yani Chuhu Ukshem Shem Keves Lo Marbim May Avril Litzorf Bishvil Rov Am. So there's another part of the Avodah this Sfas Emes says where we don't have to divvy it up amongst the Kohanim, and that's called the Avodah Sakeves. And here yet the Gemara insists that we have to divvy it up. He says, "V'yishev shei efshal laharbos hanoshim me'ever l'regilos te'im yolichu shnayim dovashem regilos rak bi'echad harei kishnayim sha'osu v'lo choshev molach v'lachein rak bi'par sha'regilos bishnayim ha'yimale b'rov am." So basically, the Sfas Emes' argument is that when you have smaller animals, like a keves, which is a lamb, that can be carried by one person, then if we do it in an irregular way, because we want to get more kohanim involved, and two kohanim will carry it, that's a violation of regilus, of what's normally done, and that's called shnayim sha'asuhu. When two people do the malach that could be done by one, that's an unusual kind of malach, and it's not called a malach. It's not called an avoda. But here in the case of Yerechayim, of these large thighs of the shor, it's usually carried by two. Why would we encourage one person to do the work that's usually done by two? Then he has another problem about pious. And pious means that the kohanim who are in the mishmar, who were in charge of the avoda, used to do a pious. They used to do a lottery, and that lottery would determine who would be zochin in that avoda. And he says, "Kevan shazchiyah b'pious hu baze achar ze im kein l'shitoso shiyochol likach shnei chalokim lo zochin isharim rakefi atzorch shavodoso." So he has a discussion here, what the other kohanim part of the pious or not? If the only individual who was zochin this pious was b'no shel Marta, so then we'd have to waive the halacha of Barov Am Hajus Melech in favor of the halacha of pious. So again, if he individually, as a soul, you know, is successfully with zochin the pious, so then that's his rights. He doesn't have to share his rights with other Kohen. So he quotes here the Shagas Aryeh, who says that in the case of a Karban Tzibur, Nechshav Shegozol Michelkom Bepayis, if he takes the pious for himself, that would be considered Gzela. So again, you have to know the laws of pious. So Rav Osai, let's leave this sugya for now because we ran out of time, but with the two questions that remain outstanding. Number one is to explain why they needed this massive amount of oil. Maybe like you say, they wanted to engender a certain light that would shine for miles, for distances. And number two, why all this emphasis on the physical prowess and strength of the various kohanim, or in this case, the pirchei kohanim. Okay, so those are the two questions that we're leaving outstanding. Okay, then?
Thank you very much, Rabbi.
Yes, Shukar. Okay, well, thanks. And believe me, we'll try to continue. Believe me. Yes, sure, please.
I want to. We finished learning at 10:30.
Right, I'm sorry, I apologize. Yeah,
I wanted to ask you if I can set for another hour of learning or something.
With someone else. Yeah. Oh, that would be great. Can I ask you to just write it out for me? I'll give you a page. Right, I'll give you another one.
The more I'm here, the more I realize I
am. Okay, great.